Take your Bibles this evening, turn to the book of Ruth. Ruth chapter number 1. Oh, aren't you thankful for justification? Now they'd say, where I'm from, that that's a lot better than snuff, not quite as dusty. I hope you get some of that. That was good. I appreciate that, Brother Gilmore. Man, that was just it's good to hear. Ruth chapter number 1. I hope that this will help us tonight. Obviously, the intent of every preacher is that it'll help, and I'll save the title as we get through this and work our way to the message, and want us to get the story and the context and the framework here. This may be more preventative than anything else, but I do believe that it can be a help to us, and it will be a help to us if we will embrace the truth. And that's what God would have for every truth that we receive, that we embrace it and we experientially know that and allow it to do its work within our lives. So let's stand together and we'll read these opening verses of Ruth chapter number 1. Ruth 1 verse 1, "Now it came to pass in the days when the judges ruled, that there was a famine in the land, and a certain man of Bethlehem, Judah, went to sojourn in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons. And the name of the man was Elimelech, the name of his wife Naomi, and the name of his two sons Mahlon, Chilion, Ephratites of Bethlehem, Judah. And they came into the country of Moab and continued there. And Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died, and she was left, and her two sons. And they took them wives of the women of Moab. The name of the one was Orpah, the name of the other, Ruth. And they dwelled there about 10 years. And Mahlon and Chilion died also, both of them, and the woman was left of her two sons and her husband. Then she arose with her daughters-in-law, that she might return from the country of Moab, for she had heard in the country of Moab how that the Lord had visited his people in giving them bread. Wherefore she went forth out of the place where she was, and her two daughters-in-law with her, and they went on the way to return unto the land of Judah. And Naomi said unto her two daughter-in-laws, Go, return each to her mother's house. The Lord deal kindly with you as ye have dealt with the dead and with me. The Lord grant you that ye may find rest, each of you in the house of her husband. Then she kissed them, they lifted their voice and wept. And they said unto her, Surely we will return with thee unto thy people. And Naomi said, Turn again, my daughters, why will ye go with me? Are there yet any more sons in my womb, that they may be your husbands? Turn again, my daughters, go your way, for I'm too old to have a husband. If I should say I have hope, if I should have a husband also tonight, and should also bear sons, would ye tarry for them till they were grown? Would ye stay for them from having husbands? Nay, my daughters, for it grieveth me much for your sakes that the hand of the Lord is gone out against me. And they lifted up their voice and wept again. And Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clave unto her. And she said, Behold, thy sister-in-law is gone back unto her people and unto her gods. Return thou after thy sister-in-law. And Ruth said, Entreat me not to leave thee or return from following after thee. For whither thou goest, I will go. Where thou lodgest, I will lodge. Thy people shall be my people and thy God my God. Where thou diest will I die, and there will I be buried. The Lord do so to me and more also, if aught but death part thee and me. And when she saw that she was steadfastly minded to go with her, then she left speaking unto her. So they two went until they came to Bethlehem. And it came to pass, when they were come to Bethlehem, that all the city was moved about them. And they said, Is this Naomi? And she said unto them, Call me not Naomi, call me Mara. For the Almighty hath dealt very bitterly with me. I went out full, and the Lord hath brought me home again empty. Why then call ye Naomi, seeing the Lord hath testified against me, and the Almighty hath afflicted me? So Naomi returned, and Ruth the Moabitess, her daughter-in-law, with her, which returned out of the country of Moab, and they came to Bethlehem in the beginning of barley harvest. Thank you. Please be seated. The book of Ruth is a short book, but it's a wonderful book. It's a love story. It's not a romance novel. It's really a true love story. The Bible says the time is when the judges ruled. You can look at the end of Judges 21, verse 25, the last verse of Judges, and you find what kind of time that Ruth is situated in. It says, in those days there was no king in Israel. Every man did that which was right in his own eyes. According to that, according to Ruth 1 and verse 1, the story took place during the time of the judges, this 400-year period after Israel entered the promised land under Joshua and before there were any kings. And here you find the recipe for confusion and chaos. Everyone's doing that which is right in their own eyes. Ruth is a wonderful book. It's one of two books in the Bible that bear the names of women. Ruth, and the other one is Esther. But this book is unique because it is devoted primarily to a woman whose name was Ruth, from the eyes and through the perspective of Naomi. But here in the midst of this chaos and confusion, you find this nation in the book of Judges experiencing religious confusion, moral confusion, civil confusion, and that's how Judges ends. You remember the cycle, the people would sin, and God would allow the enemies to come against them. The people would cry for God to deliver, and God would mercifully raise up a judge to deliver. And again, the people rebelled, and from all outward appearances, God's purposes for righteousness and glory in Israel seemed to be failing. And then the book of Ruth. I think the book of Ruth does for us is, it's to give us a glimpse of the work of God behind the scenes, the hidden work of God during some of the worst of times. It's refreshing to see a man and his wife and children. It's refreshing to see a family today in the midst of chaos and confusion. It's such a refreshing to see a family that is bent on serving God. It's great to see a family imbibe Bible principles, revival truth, and apply them day in and day out, and to see them over a period of time begin to reap what they sow because they didn't grow weary in well-doing. It's refreshing. The book of Ruth is a refreshing oasis in the midst of a desert setting of chaos and confusion. Well, we're introduced to a good family in chapter 1 and verse 1. The Bible says that here is a man in this passage of Scripture, in verse 2 rather, the name of the man was Elimelech, and his wife is Naomi. And so we must get these two individuals down because this is our scene, this is the setting, these are the characters. And so we have Elimelech and Naomi. So the man's name is Elimelech, and his wife's name is Naomi. Elimelech, his name simply means, my God is king. My God is king. Elimelech's name means, my God is king. Now Naomi, her name simply means pleasant, sweetness, lovely, delightful. Now we can only imagine the nicknames that Elimelech must have had for his wife. Sweetie, delightful, pleasant, whatever it may be. Naomi, her name is pleasant. Naomi's name simply means what? Pleasant. Elimelech's name means, my God is king. Now we're told that they're from the place called Bethlehem, Judah. Bethlehem, it's the place you're thinking of. It's the place where Jesus would be born. Bethlehem, as you well know, is house of bread, sustenance, provision, life, the place where God sustains. Judah, Bethlehem, Judah. Judah means praise. Judah was that favorable tribe whose purpose was to bring praise to God. And so we're also told, and the Bible tells us that in verse 2, and the name of the man was Elimelech. His name means, my God is king, and the name of his wife is? And her name simply means pleasant. And the name of the two sons is Mahlon, Chilion, but they're Ephratites of the Bethlehem Judah. Ephratites simply describes this famous family line or this well-known name. It's a it would be akin to talking about the Bushes today, the Kennedys, the Clintons, the Trumps, just a recognizable name. And here you have God's people. They're in God's country. And their names even portray the favor and the blessings of God. If you're a saved man, your testimony ought to be, my God is king. That ought to be normal. This ought not be unusual to have the testimony as the name Elimelech represents. My God is king ought to be the testimony of every saved man. And if you're a saved lady, your testimony ought to be that of pleasant, joyful, delightful. Because of your new birth, because of your position in Christ, because of what we heard sung, being justified, you are the tribe of Judah. You're an heir of God and joint heir with Jesus Christ. Your testimony ought to be that of God is my king. Your testimony ought to be that of delightful and joyful, pleasant. Perhaps this was an ordinary family. An ordinary family blessed of God living in the place of blessing. Their children's names, Mahlon and Chilion, they give the portrayal of disaster and overwhelmed family because of trial adversity. Their names would mean weak, sick, failing. And so you have a good family. But you find here this good family experiences a real test. There's a famine that is occurring. Notice in verse 1, now it came to pass in the days when the judges ruled that there was a famine in the land. So here's a good family. Elimelech means my God is king. Naomi means, and they're experiencing a severe and very real test, a famine. Now the reason for the famine, according to 2 Chronicles chapter 7, is because they were under the chastisement of God. Deuteronomy 28, God promised great abundant blessing for obedience. He promised chastisement. He promised for those who would disobey and rebel that his hand would be against them. So the famine was simply a divine chastisement upon Israel. Bethlehem, house of bread. And yet you see the inconsistency with that because now there's a famine. But the famine's because of sin. Now, one thing to note here. You can't run from the chastening hand of God. You find a good family that's experiencing this famine. And the Bible tells us in verse number 2, this man, Elimelech, and his wife Naomi and the sons, they come at the end of verse 2 into the country of Moab and they continued there. They're leaving the place of blessing because of famine, testing, hard times. But the reality is you can't move somewhere else and find easy times. You lack peace. If you are finding an absence of peace due to disobedience, you can't move away from the circumstance and find contentment. You can't get away from God. You can't choose to go anywhere and do anything and escape the chastening hand of God. You can't do that. God promised the nation of Israel that righteousness would provide them the early rains and the latter rains. However, God promised, again, sin and disobedience would produce a parched life of drought and famine. So God's people, they're under the chastening hand of God. So this country, Bethlehem, Judah, the house of bread, sustenance, is experiencing famine and drought. And a good, blessed family is now facing a time of testing and emptiness. So my question to Elimelech, when he decides to pack his family up in verse 2 and move to the country of Moab, my question to him is this: what are you thinking? Where's your brain? Jeremiah 48 verse 29 tells us concerning Moab, we have heard the pride of Moab. He is exceeding proud. God's estimation of Moab is told to us in Psalm 60 and verse 8. God says about Moab that Moab is my washpot. A washpot. Now that's not a compliment. I have two pit bulls. Some think they're miniature horses, but they're not. They're just pit bulls. Good pit bulls, but they're pit bulls. And they're dogs. My wife calls them dogs. I say they're pit bulls. They're, you know, they've got a more appropriate title. She says they're dogs. And especially when they stink, they become stinking dogs. I say, well, they're still pit bulls. They're stinking pit bulls, but we don't really stay on that argument too long. The point she's getting at is you need to wash them. And so Mesa, Amos, I say, come. And we go into the bathroom and have them step into the bathtub, and there we wash. And I want to tell you, the dirt, the water that is left after they've been washed is dirty. I wouldn't want to get in it after I've washed them. And they're fairly clean dogs. I mean, they get a bath once a week, just like some of you. It's not bad. But that's not good water. This washpot concept is a whole lot worse than a couple of dirty dogs being washed. This is that water that's been left over from having washed and cleaned up some dirty feet or dirty body. You've got this film, this residue of dirt upon the water, and God is saying, that's my estimation of Moab. Moab, they're a proud, troublesome neighbor of Israel. Moab was the son of Lot from an incestuous relationship. They're constant enemies of God's people. They're abominable people. They're idolatrous. They're immoral. We're told in 1 Kings 11 that Solomon erred in loving women of the Moabites. We're told that Nehemiah severely judged those who took wives of the Moabites. And so, though God had nothing ever good to say about Moab or the Moabites, this man Elimelech, this good man, this perhaps blessed man of God, living in a blessed place, Elimelech is finding a severe testing, trial, a time of famine. And the man whose testimony is God is king packs up his family without God's leadership or permission, and he goes to sojourn. Notice in verse 1, a certain man in the middle of the verse of Bethlehem, Judah, went to, say the word, sojourn. He just went to visit a spell. You know, just what you expect when your family come and visit you during the break. It's great to have family, but you say, well, I'm thankful that they're just sojourning. You know, it gets crowded in those quarters, and there's a time in which they're going to go back. But notice what Ruth 1 and verse 2 says. And the name of the man was Elimelech, the name of his wife Naomi, and the name of the two sons, Mahlon, Chilion, Ephratites of Bethlehem, Judah, and they came into the country of Moab and, what's the next word? Continued. They went from visiting a spell, sojourning in verse 1, to continuing in verse 2. Let me say to you, you make your decisions. You always will make decisions. You know, you witness to someone, they say, I'm not ready to make that decision to trust Christ. we understand that they've made a decision. We're making decisions. Every truth we're confronted with, we're making a decision. Whether we want to act in obedience or not does not mean we are not making a decision. We're always making a decision. And the fact is, you make your decisions, and then your decisions will turn around and make you. He made his decision to leave the place of blessing. He went down to Moab. He went there to sojourn for just a little while, temporarily. Things seem to be nice in Moab. They're not so nice in the revival land. They got along with people real well. The farmers and the boys got adjusted well at school and the Moabite life. And Elimelech made his decision to stay temporarily, but then his decisions turned around and made him, and he ended up putting some roots down. They continued there. Elimelech died. And then his two sons dwelled there about 10 years. In verse number 4, the Bible tells us, and they took them wives of the women of Moab. The name of the one was Orpah, and the name of the other was Ruth, and they dwelled there about 10 years. See, returning to the revival land, the place of blessing, was not in their plans. They took wives of the women of Moab. They took these wives, they made decisions, and the decisions they made turned around and made them, and they settled in to stay. Now Elimelech went to Moab because of the famine. He must have heard of the blessing, seemingly, the plenty in the land of Moab. And perhaps he reasoned this way: you know, my kids, my wife, they're depending upon me, and you know, I've got to provide for them and I've got to feed them. So he leaves with dreams of better days ahead. Does that at all sound familiar? Making decisions to leave where God has placed you because of an outward circumstance? How about Abraham going down into Egypt? How about Lot moving to Sodom? The Bible, we're told in chapter 1, Naomi's testimony, she tells us that Elimelech, when he left the revival land, the place of blessing, they went out full. But when they got down to the place of Moab, they didn't stay full. He left at the first sign of inconvenience or uneasiness, which indicates his shallow faith. The effects of simple decisions, they can be far-reaching. I know the crowd we have here tonight is by and large the constituents of the college, and then there are others. But understand, when people decide to drop out of a Sunday night service temporarily, it can easily lead to them dropping out of all the services altogether. You decide not to tie the spell. It can lead to never getting started again. You decide to not have your devotions one day. It can lead to you curtailing it the next day, and shaving off time the next day, and compromising the integrity of your time with God the day after, and never getting back to where it once was. You can quit visitation or quit the intensity of going in expectation, and you may never get back to where you once were. And if you sit here and say, though that might happen to them, it'll never happen to me, don't forget about Peter. Those sojourns can easily become permanent. Those first small steps away will lead to more steps, which eventually add up to having strayed away from God. And I don't believe Elimelech ever dreamed his decision would result in such severe consequences, but they did. Elimelech. His name means My God is King. He didn't die that way. And then we come to Naomi. Naomi's name means, verse number 20. And she said unto them, call me not pleasant. Call me Mara. For the Almighty hath dealt very bitterly with me. Naomi. She goes from being pleasant to bitter. She goes from being pleasant to bitter. There are reasons why people get bitter. As we looked at last night, it's really not a matter of do you have a right to be offended or bothered, but really it's the matter of can you afford to be. Naomi's outlook, inlook, and uplook, it all changes. The reasons perhaps that Naomi has become a bitter individual is because, one, of the bad decisions that somebody else made. She didn't make the decisions to leave Bethlehem, Judah, but Elimelech, her husband, did. And perhaps she's so torn up on the inside and she's having a hard time and has a bad taste in her mouth because of the bad, poor, wrong decisions made by somebody else. Maybe you've come from a home where somebody else made the decision. Maybe the decision was to go through a divorce and you didn't choose for your parents to go through the divorce. You didn't have a say-so in as to whether your father would stay or go. And perhaps you struggle with where you might be and there's a bitterness because of some bad decisions made by someone else. Naomi, why are you bitter? Maybe she's bitter because of just setback after setback after setback after setback. I mean, they leave the place of blessing, Bethlehem, Judah. She leaves her home. She leaves all of her roots and she goes to a foreign place, foreign language, everything, and starts all over. And then she loses. Not only did she lose her home, moving to Moab, she lost her husband. She lost her two sons. It's just setback after another, and sometimes what an explosion cannot do to you, over a period of time, erosion has brought many a person to having and experiencing bitterness. Maybe she's bitter because she just left the people of God. Remember, Bethlehem, Judah is the place of covenant blessing, the people of God. And she leaves and she doesn't get the encouragement. She doesn't have the preaching and the teaching of the Word of God. She doesn't get that. She doesn't hear that. You know, I sometimes struggle when I'm just baffled whenever somebody says, I ask, where have you been? We haven't seen you at church in a while. Well, you know, we've had these setbacks, these problems. My husband lost his job. We've had this sickness and all these things. And I think to myself, that's not the reason why you leave church. That's the reason why you need to hunker down and stay put. You need that encouragement. There's a reason God designed that there be a place with His authority upon it where you can find constant, continual encouragement and edification. And it's such an essential aspect in the way God made us. But here she gets cut off. She's isolated from the people of God and the blessings that stem from those people. And that may be the reasons. But what are the response? The responses of bitter people. What's the response of a bitter Naomi? Well, notice what happens in verse number 8. Remember, Naomi said unto her two daughters-in-law after her husband died, after the sons died. She says to their daughters-in-law, now you go return to your mother's house. The Lord deal kindly with you as you've dealt with the dead and with me. Verse number 10, they said unto her, no, we will return with thee and to thy people. Verse 11, and Naomi said, no, Turn again, my daughters. Why will you go with me? Are there yet any more sons in my womb? Verse 12, turn again, my daughters. Go your way. And so here she has a response towards others the way a lot of times bitter people respond. And it's the concept of leave me alone. The only two people really left in her life, it would be Orpah and Ruth. And she says, now leave me alone. Go back to your home. That's the way a lot of bitter people. Maybe the bad taste is because somebody's made some decisions and you're not responsible for those decisions, but you are experiencing the effect and ramifications of that. Maybe because you've had so many setbacks, one after another, and you just don't think that there's an end in sight. Maybe it's just you've isolated yourself from the people of God. And so often then bitter people, they just get to a point of saying, leave me alone. So why we text sometimes, haven't seen you in a while, and bitter people don't text back. Bitter people don't get back with you. They just cut off and don't want to be bothered. But not only did she treat others with leave me alone, but then she has the complex. Notice in verse number 19, and it came to pass as they were come to Bethlehem that all the city was moved about them. They said, is this Naomi? She said unto them, no, it's not. No, I'm not the one that's blessed. I'm not the one that's pleasant. I'm bitter. That was her identification. The fact is, if you're saved, that's not your identification. You're a child of God. You're of the tribe of Judah. She says to others, she sees others, leave me alone. She says, I'm a wreck. I'm a mess. My name is Mara. That's what I want to go by from now on. And then she has a bad view of God. Verse 20. Call me not Naomi, call me Mara, for the Almighty hath dealt very bitterly with me. She tells us in the end of verse 13, it grieveth me much for your sakes that the hand of the Lord has gone out against me. She's saying, I'm in a mess. Leave me alone. God did it to me. God did this. Don't understand why God blessed them. God never blesses me. You know, God had a way of helping cure her bitterness. Can't really spend much time on this, but it is a help. One of the ways God helped her is the way God helps people today. God uses a resource to help hurting people. The resource God uses to help hurting people, bitter people, messed up people, is other people. He used a Ruth. Ruth was, if there is anybody that is others-minded, it was Ruth. Sensitive, steadfast, I'm not budging. Ruth stuck with her. Ruth served her. And God began to cure Naomi of her bitterness by using someone else who was selfless. Let me ask you, have you given up on praying for somebody? Have you given up on texting them and calling them, getting in touch with them? God also used Bible truth to help Naomi. You remember Ruth, she goes out, she says, I'm going to work and be a help to Naomi. Hey, and aren't you thankful it's Ruth who made the right decision to trust the Lord? I sure would be hating to preach from the book of Orpah. I'm thankful it was Ruth. And Ruth goes out, and you remember Boaz, and you remember the gleaners in the field, and he told them to put some handfuls down on purpose, and she does all this, and and she comes and she shows the blessing, and then she goes and go down the story, and you find she figures out that there's one whose name is Boaz, and she communicates the story to Naomi, and Naomi says, what is his name again? She begins to figure out the kinsman redeemer. Remember, Naomi comes up with this story. And she said, here's what you're going to do. When he goes to bed at night, you're going to crawl in there and get under the blanket near his feet. I want to tell you, my wife and I would have never gotten married if she had to do that in order to. I can't even get her to help me take my shoes and socks off. She just says, that's off limits. So I'm thinking this has to be of God for someone to crawl down in at the end of a man's feet and curl up and lay there. I wonder if she just kept the blanket off of her nose or something so she at least gets some fresh air. But Naomi is remembering a truth. And it's like Naomi saying, it's almost like God knew a long time ago that this would come in handy in my life today. It's almost like maybe there is the omniscience of God and Bible truth. You know, bitter people never think that Bible truth applies to them. And here God is using truth that has been established to help this woman see God's not against you, Naomi. God is for you. God used also the faithfulness of God in her life. You know, Ruth chapter 1 and 2, Naomi's looking back, and remember when Ruth comes back after spending a night down at the feet of Boaz, and she comes back home, and it's like Naomi says, well, what are you? Are you Mrs. Boaz yet? And she says, no. And remember, Boaz said, hey, listen, I understand the principle here, but there's one other man. There's one man who has the right to this, and he has to make the decision. And it's almost as though Ruth is saying to Naomi, the law's right. This principle is true, what you're saying, but there's still one other man that stands in between who has the right. And Naomi's attitude has changed. And it's like she says, just sit down. She's beginning to see the faithfulness of God. You don't have to follow him, Ruth. You don't have to fret over this. But what I want us to get at is Elimelech, my God is king. He didn't die that way. Naomi goes from pleasant to bitter. What should they have done? What should Elimelech have done? I mean, after all, look at what's happening. Too many times I heard while traveling on the road of circumstances and scenarios as someone would come to me in a church and say, I'm moving from this place because there's been a job offer to move from this city, this state, this church to another state somewhere else. And because you're an evangelist, I wonder, do you know of a church in that area? I say, well, there may be. I think we can work on that. When do you have to make a decision? And too many times the answer came back, we've already made the decision. Well, you've made the decision to move, but you haven't yet found the place where God would have you to be. And it was frustrating. But now, as a pastor, when someone comes and says, I've got this chance to have a tremendous salary increase that'll help us not just get out of debt, but actually be able to free us up so we can be available and serving God and doing more things for God. But it's going to take us missing Sunday mornings and occasional Wednesday nights. And I've seen in such a short time, they make the decision, then the decision makes them. Someone came and said, I believe God would have us to move across the state or across the 20 hours away, several states away, to take this great job, and I can do this work and I won't have to work but part of the year, and I'll be able to make twice as much as what I'm making right now. And I said, I don't see it. You're nowhere close to a good church. I don't see it. What used to frustrate me in evangelism when I would hear that with people I didn't know, but in churches with pastors that I did know, now when I hear it with people I do know, all I could think is, you make the decision, then the decision, it will make you. What is Elimelech supposed to do? Let me give you the answer. Here's the title of the message. And I told you, this may be just something that's going to help us down the road. And what should Elimelech have done? What should Naomi have done? Trust God no matter what. Trust God. No matter what. Trust God. No matter what. Famine. Dryness. Emptiness. If your God is king, trust Him no matter what. If the decisions were made out of your realm of control, trust Him no matter what. Never make decisions based upon outward appearance. Listen, you've signed up to come to college. You have to know, because God tells us so. He's going to test your faith. There will be testing, and there will be times of dryness. There will be dry spells. The point is not to move you. The point is to cause you to become firm in your resolution to trust Him no matter what. He knows about the famine. He knows when the rain will come. He knows where the blessing can be found. He's not wanting to move you whenever there is a testing of your faith. He's testing, trying, James 1, your faith, so that you will have greater staying power. Trust Him no matter what. But you don't, no. Trust Him no matter what. But you don't understand. No, I don't have to either. But you and I, we do have to trust Him no matter what. Trust in the Lord with all thine heart. Well, I wonder how much of our heart He wants us to trust Him with. Trust Him no matter what. Lean not unto thine own understanding. Why does He say that? Because how many times has a person said, well, you know, the way I see it, that's not the issue. That's not your business. Anybody in here omniscient? Then how could you ever say to an omniscient king, the way I see it, that'd be like me calling up the coach of the University of Georgia. So I just want to tell you, Kirby, here's how I see it. And I wouldn't get through to Him, and I shouldn't get through to Him. But yet we do that with God. He said, but you don't understand. I'm a single parent. I've got these responses. That's not your business. Your business is to trust God no matter what. Quit making decisions based upon outward circumstances. Quit making decisions. And listen, one of the testimonies here, you have Naomi, two daughters-in-law, and two of them make different decisions. And it's a reminder to me, and it ought to be a reminder to you moms, that it is vitally important that you're living right, you're responding right in front of your children, because you're in front of them an awful lot, because they do see, and they see how you make decisions, and you're teaching them how to make decisions. And when they too make decisions, their decisions too will make them. Never make a major decision without God's direction and God's approval. It'd be better to die obeying God than to have material prosperity and disobedience. There have been many Elimelechs in our time that have left the place of God's will to go somewhere because grass is greener, the lights are brighter, and I'm just going to go there for a short time. I'm going to get things figured out and squared away, and we're going to be right back. But it's only been to their hurt. Listen, spiritual famines are much worse than physical famines. Where's God in this move, Elimelech? Where do we see God in this move? Where's the seeking of God? But please understand, Moab is not a geographical location. Remember the prodigal son in Luke 15? He went off to the far country. It's just like it's a long, long, far, far away. But the far country is the decision you make right in your heart, sitting right where you are. Moab is not a geographical location. Some of you have been in Moab while here on these pews for year after year after year. It's not a geographical move. It's a move where you decide not to trust God. You don't have to leave Menominee Falls, Wisconsin. You don't have to change churches in order to go to Moab. You can go to Moab by a decision in your heart. But know when you go. Know when you decide. Know when you decide not to unload the truck. Know when you decide not to go all the way with God. Know when you decide not to follow the principles that have been laid out for various areas of your life. Know when you begin to look at things and say and justify and begin to rationalize and say, well, these are not sin issues. And they tell us that these are not sin issues. It's just the way they do it. And when you begin to rationalize and justify and begin to cut corners in your heart and just have an outward conformity but not an inward abiding, just know when you go, you're going to go a whole lot further than you ever imagined. Everything in my soul cries out to this assembly, don't leave Bethlehem, Judah. The testing will come. It has to come. You ought to want it to come. You say, why should we want it to come? Because your God is king. And when you know Him, you can live with the joy of the Lord. You may be here and you say, I envision my life being this way. Somebody did this to me and I just can't get over it. No, it's really not that you can't get over it. It's just that you choose not to. Whatever happened, you're just stating the reality of God. If you're facing testing and famine and hardship and everything just seems to be not quite what you thought it would be or should be because of being here, whatever happened to stating the reality? God, you've been so good to me. God, you're good all the time. All the time you're good. Because that's true. I'm thankful. You can be here in a place like this where you can learn, men, to have a testimony reality that your God is king. I'm thankful that young ladies can come here to college and learn what it means to be pleasant. It's a blessing. Well, no other school has these kind of standards. Very few places have this kind of blessing. Hey, I just look around at the culture today and I see what my children and your children have to grow up in. And I say, no matter how difficult and trying it may be in Bethlehem, Judah, Moab is not the answer. Oh, I'm thankful that there's a place I could send my daughter. I do need to talk with you to see if you'll be able to accept my Medicaid by then, and in order for that to happen. May have to be taken out of my retirement pension or something there for that to happen, but this may be a testing time. It may be a chastening time. But I will not leave or wander away from you, God. Some of you may be struggling because God disappointed you. Someone offended you. And deep in your heart, you cannot say that God is your king tonight. You better weigh your decisions carefully. What should Naomi have done? Naomi should have remembered that God had not forgotten Naomi. What was God trying to do? What God was trying to do, notice in verse 6, and she arose with her daughters-in-law that she might return from the country of Moab. God's not against you, Naomi. God's trying to get you back to the place of blessing. What should Naomi have done? The same thing Elimelech should have done. Trust God no matter what. Trust Him no matter what. The book of Ruth came along at a time of irresponsible living in Israel's history. It was calling the people back to a greater responsibility and faithfulness before God, even in difficult times. This applies to us very clearly to us today. We belong to a loving, faithful, powerful God who's never failed to care for us, to provide for us. Like Ruth, like Boaz, we're called to respond to that divine enabling grace and faithful obedience in spite of the godless culture in which we live. Amen. Trust God no matter what. Are you willing? Bow with me, please. As already been said, Lord, it is true. 'Tis so sweet to trust in Jesus. Just to take you at your word. Lord, help us to see, although this may be entirely preventative for everyone here tonight, help us to understand that this is more than emotional, more than a whim of a decision when we say we're going to trust you no matter what. It is getting to the place of blessing, knowing how to stay in the place of blessing, knowing that testings will come, difficulties will come. But you're always faithful. I pray that you deal with any bitterness that might be here, any lingering effect. Pray that you'd help those who may be at a place of looking over into a Moab, any place outside of your will and blessing. Lord, I do pray that you would just apply by the Spirit of God to each of our hearts as needed. And thank you for speaking to my heart tonight. Help us, I pray.